today we have got Ganesh Pai with us, the founder of don'tmemorize.com, the name which easily resonates to anyone who would like to learn something and memorize. So Ganesh comes out and says that you don't have to memorize anything. It's just don'tmemorize.com, and he has been helping students predominantly in India, but he has been quickly acquiring a base across the globe in terms of edutech, and he's been funded by YouTube and Google recently, and he's in a tremendous growth path. So let's hear from Ganesh Pai.
Thanks, Vijay, for having me.
For the viewers, if you can just give a gist of what is don'tmemorize.com and how you ended up starting don'tmemorize.com, it would be great.
Sure. So I'll have to take you back by 6 years, you know, when I was having a conversation with my dad. I think you know about the story. Yes. So I was saying that, hey, I want to get into education. I want to quit my job, and I want to have, say, maybe 4 or 5 brick and mortar centers, you know, so that I could teach probably 50 students in the first year. And then eventually I'll end up teaching maybe 500 students, maybe 1000 students, you know. That was the goal I had, to which, you know, my dad replied, why just 1000, you know, why not millions? And that's when I realized that, hey, if I really want scale, if I really want to help more number of students, I have to go online, you know, I have to use technology in some form or the other. That's how I started creating educational videos. While I was studying, of course, I had this idea that maybe I should go live, but the scalability with live is lower, which is why I thought, you know, why not go ahead with just creating video content, you know, and you just have to do it well, you have to do it well once, and you're seeing the results now, right? So, that's how the idea was kind of germinated, you know, and I realized that, hey, if I want to teach millions, I should probably go online. And without giving it much thought, I started creating educational video content. That's how it started. I did not, you know, have this goal or this vision to make a startup out of it or to, say, generate business out of it. It was just like, hey, you know, I'm really excited to do this. And I started working on it. I started creating content. And I think 3-4 years down the line, I realized that a lot of people are appreciating the content that we have created. You know, a lot of companies started getting in touch with us saying, hey, can we license content from you? You know, like, can we, in short, can we show your content on our website? And we're ready to pay you for that. And that's when I realized that, hey, there's a lot of value in what we're doing. And if we are able to make, say, business out of it, if you're able to generate revenue, sustain and create more content, then why not start doing it? So that's how, like, maybe 3 years down the line, I thought maybe, okay, let's probably create a startup, you know, and see how things go, you know. And so I'll just, to for our viewers to understand what Don't Memorize is all about, I think they need to understand what the startup is all about, what the business is all about. And for that, I need to tell them, you know, the different ways in which we generate revenue. Okay, and I'll keep it very simple. There are just 4 ways in which we do that. First, the most important source of revenue we have is we license our content to various organizations. So some of the top edtech companies within India are using our content and on their website. So the benefit for them is they don't have to spend a lot of money to create the content again. The benefit for us is that we make revenues. So the idea was to help many more organizations enhance their education technology product. So that's the first source of revenue we have. We upload around 20%, 20 to 25% of our content on YouTube. That's the only way in which we market our content, because YouTube is the best free marketing platform you have for videos. So we generate some ad revenue from there. That's the second source of revenue. The third source of revenue is, like you said, you know, like we've raised money from, say, YouTube, you know. So YouTube has given a grant to us over the past 2 years. They've given us 2 grants, actually, and we were one of the top 7 to 8 companies to be selected by YouTube for those grants. Really? So the support that we get from Google and YouTube is probably the third source. And the fourth source is something that we just started about 3 months ago. So to access all the content, we've kept a very, very, very nominal fee for our students. You know, so people can log on to don'tmemorize.com, register there, and subscribe to the courses. You know, so that revenue source, I believe, will help us sustain and will help us grow. You know, so for complete access to the whole library and many more features, students should subscribe to our courses on, say, don'tmemorize.com. So I'd say these are the four ways in which, say, we kind of generate revenues to sustain and to grow. And I think the journey and the goal that we had of, say, teaching millions, that has already been done. Like, we've crossed over 110 million views on our YouTube channel. So that means approximately we've already educated close to, say, 3 to 4 million students, you know. So that's something that I have already done. That's something that my team has let me do. And now the dream is bigger. Now the dream is probably I want to someday educate a billion learners. And that's the quest, you know, that we have right now. And we are going to achieve that. I don't know how much time it's going to take. It would be very tempting to say that we're going to achieve this in the next 5 years, but I don't think it's going to be easy. We're going to say work much harder. And I think over the next, say, probably 10 years, we are able to educate, say, a billion learners, you know, in this world. And that's the dream that I have for Don't Memorize.
Awesome. So from a discussion of having a standard brick and mortar model and helping out, say, 50 to 60 students in a year, from there to helping out, say, million students, it's been a great journey in the last 5 to 6 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. I was looking at a lot of channels and YouTube channels and things like that where they talk about EduTech in India, and still they don't end up talking about you. So I thought it's high time that people start, though I know that you got a huge subscriber base and things like that, but the mainstream, I think people should know about Don't Memorize.
To answer your question, right, like, people don't talk about Don't Memorize, you know, a lot. You hear about a lot of other EduTech players and not really about Don't Memorize. I think I know why that is happening. I had this feeling that, you know, people, or say news websites, or say anyone who's covering news basically talks about startups because, say, the startups are generating a lot of value, you know, startups are helping a lot of people. But the more I got into it, the more I realized that it's a lot of PR spends that various startups do, you know, and other websites start writing about them. I don't believe that we really need to spend money on PR, and we should let our work do the talking rather than, say, various startup news websites. So which is why we've not invested a lot of money in PR, which is why you won't hear a lot about Don't Memorize. I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea to invest in PR. Of course you can, but I just don't think it's the right time probably for us to do that. But sometime in the future, we may do that, because visibility always helps. But the main reason why you won't hear about Don't Memorize is because, yes, we are not investing any kind of money in PR. Otherwise, I think things are going great with Don't Memorize. Our viewership has increased significantly during this pandemic time. It's unfortunate whatever is happening in the world. A lot of people have lost jobs. A lot of sectors are not really doing well. So I hope the world recovers fast and things get better soon, you know. But if I have to talk specifically about EduTech, yes, you know, my viewership over the last few months has increased, I think, close to 225%.
Wow.
So our YouTube channel is doing phenomenally. And I think students are saying a lot of good things. And even teachers have started saying a lot of good things, you know. And we've started noticing that teachers are using our tutorials to teach their students, which is interesting, you know, in a way, because then that shows us that teachers really believe in our ideas, you know, our concepts, the way in which we deliver concepts. So that's also a good thing, you know. And overall, I think viewership has shot up significantly, and now is the right time, I think, for us to step up our game and generate more content so that we could help more students and teachers, you know, to quickly adapt to, say, the online model. The shift from, say, the physical classroom to the online classroom has been pretty quick for plenty of people, for plenty of students and teachers, and we want to be there to help them out. So we want to be there. That's the whole idea, and I think it's going great.
For a startup like you, and you spoke about that you have not invested in PR and marketing activities, which definitely you have your own thoughts of how to go about it. It is interesting that now when people listen to your story and that you are garnering a million views and YouTube has invested and things like that, people will be definitely thinking that, okay, this is a great big startup and there will be hundreds of people and working under Ganesh and things like that. Talk about your team size and how effectively, or I would say that this is one of the startups I would put as a great example of lean management. So if you can talk about your team.
Sure. So yeah, people get this feeling, you know, that the team is huge and plenty of people are working. To give you a very quick idea of, say, how small my team is, we are an 18 member team at the moment. But there's this beauty in which the way Don't Memorize really functions. So the team that we have, the full-time team that we have, like people who do call employees, including me, are close to 18. And the roles are, say, tech, marketing, sales, and I'd say quality control. You know, so QC, like quality control, is like one of the most important things you have to focus on. Most important things, I feel like if you're able to take care of the quality while you're scaling, I think the startup has won the game. You know, these are the problems that startups face when they scale, you know, the quality drops.
Yes.
So that's the team that we have in house, right? The full-time team. But we are working with more than 50 people on the outside, right? We are working with a lot of animators, a lot of illustrators, and a lot of content creators that are not really employed by us, but are working with us, you know, because they are independent. I would call them entrepreneurs as well, you know, so they have their own setups, and we approach them and we tell them that, hey, this is where we need help. Would you be willing to work with us on this project? And that's how they are working with us. So the beauty there is that model of, say, working with animators, illustrators, and content creators who are not, say, employed by us, is that it's more scalable. You know, so it's good for them and it's good for us as well. It's good for them because they are kind of building their own companies, their own setup. And that doesn't happen if you're an employee with a company, right? So they are becoming entrepreneurs. We are enabling them to become entrepreneurs, to have their own setups. And the advantage for us is that is more scalable. You know, so I can have an animator who's working probably in the US, who's doing animation for us. You know, I could have an illustrator who's from, I don't know, Bangladesh, you know, who's a genius, who's very creative, who's working with us. You know, so it helps us scale on the product development side, and it helps us scale on the content creation side as well. Because even the content creators, the good content creators, like the problem with, say, having an employee, this was pre-COVID time, is that you'd need to look for someone who stays in your locality, right? Like, nobody's going to, like, if that employee is based in Delhi, he's not going to travel to in Bombay, right? So we wanted the content creators to work from anywhere with the Witch 2, which is why, you know, you could have them work from anywhere in the world. And it's, so this whole model of having a few people in house and a lot of people working with the company externally is, I think, beneficial for everyone, because they are, like I said, become entrepreneurs, and all of them are making a lot more money than how much money they would if they were employed with us. And we are able to scale, say, the business much faster, you know. So to answer your question, the team size, actual team size is 18, but the number of people working with us is massive, you know. It's, and I'd consider them also to be a part of, say, our team. The only difference is, on paper, they are not employees, but they're still very close to us. And we, really want to work with them for, say, the longer term.
Great. So the second point that, because since it's EduTech and one of your, I would say, your prime target segment or the customers, I would say, are parents and students. So students, yes, they would, they want, they should like your content, and parents, they should be ready to invest in you in terms of taking the subscription and things like that. So the next point that comes to the mind of parents is the money that goes into any EduTech platform. So currently, when we talk about the predominant EduTech platforms which are there in India, the rate averages around 40,000 to 50,000 and a year. I'm talking about the INR. You have come out with a plan which is way cheaper than that. So can you talk about your monetarily, how much heat will a parent take if they're getting attached to don'tmemorize.com?
Okay. That's a very valid question you're asking, Vijay. Yes, the average the pricing, right, for EdTech products in India, it ranges from, like you said, like 30,000 to, say, it goes up to 1.5 lakhs also, yes. You know, like 150,000 INR. I would not comment about whether that's right or wrong. I think it depends on every company. If there are buyers, probably the companies are going to spend on marketing and convince you to buy, you know. But I have a different point of view here. For that, we need to understand the type of company that you're trying to build. You know, what we are trying to build is a product company. And the beauty of having a product company is that you have to create something just once. If you have to create something once, it means your prices cannot be high, right? It's a very logical thing to, you know, understand that if I'm creating something once, that I am, then I'm not going to charge them a lot of money, right? So the videos that you've created it once. Of course, you spent a lot of money to do that, but you've created it just once, which means ideally the price point should be very affordable. That's the beauty of creating products and being in education. If I have to create something once, I have to create a product and charge students like 150,000 for it. The only reason why I would charge that is because I'm spending a lot of money on marketing. That's the only reason why I want to cover costs. Because we don't really spend a lot of money on marketing, we are able to have a price point that teachers. So our price point annually averages, say, between 2 to 3,000 INR. Right? And that is something that parents are able to afford. And there are two reasons for that. Reason number one is, I told you, like, they've created a product once, and which is why I'm able to keep the price point. Second, it's education, you know. So because it's education, I would not want to charge a lot of money, you know, to students. It has to be on the lower side. So those are the two points why we have kept our price points really low. And third, how we are positioning ourselves, right? So we are positioning ourselves as not someone who's going to replace your school or replace your tuition teachers. We are positioning ourselves as, say, your teacher in your pocket. You know, so imagine, like, you have doubts, right, throughout the year. What do you really do? You know, you cannot call your tuition teacher. You cannot call your school teacher and stuff, right? So to answer those queries, maybe we are there. You don't remember a concept, you open the Don't Memorize website, and which the app which will launch soon probably. And just, you know, look for Newton's first law of motion and you understand. So we want to be there on the side. We're not saying we want to be the main guys, you know, though some most people are using it as, say, a main product. But where we want to position ourselves is, you know, hey, if you are in trouble, we are there. One. And if you want to understand concepts in depth, of course, they're still there. But we want to be like a tutor in your pocket. You know, and for that, parents will be willing to spend 2,000 rupees annually. It's not a lot of money.
I like the way you put it across in terms of tutor in your pocket. And when when someone can, any of the people who are interested about Don't Memorize, when they go and check your even the website, in that also you are not saying that you're going to come and replace the teachers or the educators out there. You are saying that you're going to enhance, or rather be a person or a tool which can help you to clarify your doubts. So that's how you have positioned it. And what do you call? I like the way in which you say that the Indian education is good. They are teaching really well. We are just there to help you in terms of clearing your clarifying your doubts. And 24/7 whenever you want.
So just to add to this, I was telling you about product companies, right? So because we are a product company, we can keep the price points low. So if there's a product company in the market who's kept the price points really high, there's a problem. They'll do well. You know, they'll make a lot of money. Their valuations will be very high, but it doesn't make sense according to me. The other kind of companies are, say, service companies. So for example, if I'm going to teach students live, right? It means every time I have to teach them, I have to put in more effort, right? So what happens in that case is it's not very scalable and it's not a product. It's more of a service that I'm giving them. I'm teaching you live. So if I have to teach them, say, 22 times in a year, then I have to be there 22 times.
Yes.
And next year, again, I have to be there 22 times, right? So it's not a product that I've done just once. So for that, yes, I understand the price points being higher because you have to keep doing the work to generate more money. Right? So in that case, I understand if price points are high, still not significantly high. But that's the difference. You're more of a product company, which is why price points are not very high. And I don't intend to make them high at all for the product that, say, we want to give to our students.
Yes. I'm pretty sure that people who have been using Don Memorize, say, for the last 2 to 3 years, even when you came out with this pricing model very recently, you ended up giving a huge discount for them. And I think people who were part of Don Memorize, the journey of DonMemorize.com, they were getting, I think, for 1 year for around 300 to 400 rupees, which is like going out and picking up a pizza from Domino's. So that's that's the cost you're charging for a year of knowledge that you are imparting to the students. So that's great.
And I'd like to tell you why, sorry to interrupt you, Vijay, but I'd like to tell you why we really did that. A lot of people started raising questions like, Ganesh, why are you doing this? You know, that is just like $300 a year. So before this, right, before we had a price point, like, to be honest, we had a lot of confusion. You know, should we use the B2C model? Should we have the fourth source of revenue? And we decided that it's better to have the fourth source because that is the most stable source, you know, which will help us in the future. And that will help us create more content. So a lot of people were studying on the website before we moved to this model. A lot of people, right? And suddenly we did not want to stop their learning by putting a massive price barrier. At the same time, we did not want to give everything to them for free, you know, because things lose their value if you give everything for free, right? So we thought we don't want to stop their learning. So we just stepped in and said, hey, we're giving you a 90% discount, you know, just $300. And, you know, and you pay us that and you get access for the entire year. And we didn't want to stop your learning. So people were very, very surprised. And I'm not sure if it was the right move or the wrong move. We did what we really wanted to do. We did what our hearts, you know, asked us to do. And that's what we did. So that's the reason why we had like massive discounts for the users who were a part of the Don't Memorize journey for a very long time.
Great. So there is nothing called as a free lunch, as everyone says. So yes. So even for that price, even if you don't give that discount, and for the new students, I will not say customers, so the new learners also.
Learners.
3,000 is a throwaway price. It's like, and you're getting a huge knowledge database that you can access for a year's time. So which is definitely a shot which is worth giving for all the parents out there. But anyways, so let me take you to the current scenario. The last 6 months, COVID hit, and that's when people realized that, oh, online digital platforms should be used for the teaching students. And luckily in India, what happened is that at least major areas of India, April, May, June, somewhere or the other, 2 months of summer vacations and things like that. So schools were not really, though they were trying for different channels to get connected with them, but still they were at ease. But in the last 1 or 2 months, with all the schools opened across India, a lot of teachers are struggling. They are struggling. And I could see that now we have come back and started giving back to the society in a nice way in terms of how to use YouTube and Google classrooms and things like that. So why did you decide to come out and start helping teachers out there?
The main reason is, I think, very evident. I think it was a part of your question. Teachers are struggling, you know, and when either teachers or students struggle, right, there's something that, you know, makes you help them. I don't know. It kind of comes naturally to us, and I'm not trying to be like a hero here. But we just felt, you know, the teachers are struggling. Let's do something to help them out. You know, and we, with support from Google and YouTube, again, you know, we were able to create these tutorials. You know, we told them that this is what you want to, and they were like, okay, we are willing to support you. And we created these 26 tutorials, you know, 13 in English and 13 in Hindi. And they focus on two areas. One, how teachers could use YouTube. And two, how teachers could use Google Classroom to teach their students. Both were crucial because a lot of teachers want to create videos, start a YouTube channel, but they have absolutely no idea about how they could do it. And a lot of teachers also are kind of forced to use Google Classroom to teach their students. And we wanted to have basic tutorials for that as well. So we started doing that, you know, and to answer your question, why? Of course, we just felt like helping them out. And I think it's received like a phenomenal response. Like in the first 3 weeks, the first video got like 110K views. You know, that has never really happened with Learning Live because educational content grows slowly. It doesn't grow in the first 1 or 2 weeks. So that kind of, you know, showed us that there's massive demand in the market and we are out there to help. And what was interesting was that the CEO of YouTube, you know, Susan, retweeted about this, and that kind of told us that, hey, you know, YouTube is very happy again with what we are doing and how we are helping teachers. YouTube or Google in general is very happy about this. And Susan tweeted about this and we were like, wow, this is massive. And I think I wrote a post on LinkedIn about it.
Yeah, I saw that.
And a lot of teachers are being helped, you know. So times were tough and we thought, you know, rather than just all other companies started pushing their products onto the market. So we did something radically different. We thought, you know, we'll just help them out. First, let them start working on the basics and start, let them start improving or learning their basics, and then we'll think about a product. So again, not sure if this was the right or wrong move, but we did something that our heart asked us to do. You know, our hearts, you know, asked us to do. So that was the goal. We just wanted to help the teachers. It's very simple. It was just one point.
Great. Because before doing this interview today, I was listening to your, or rather watching to your whole session that you did for the teachers for the last 1 hour. And you have put it very, in a very simple and effective manner, you have put it. In addition to teachers who are want to go into a YouTube channel, so I've been seeing that there is a tremendous increase in the number of people who have started putting up YouTube channels now sitting at home because of COVID and things like that. Either the creativity with the kids or their own cooking skills or dancing stuff and things like that. So I understand that there's going to be, in the last 3 to 4 months, the number of YouTube channels would have gone up drastically. And I think for them also, if they listen to your session for a half an hour or 1 hour, they could pick up the basics of how to put up a video and how to reach out to people and what are the tags. And I like the way you have put it in terms of there is a lot to learn. Even for a good YouTuber, there are a lot of things, the basic hygiene stuff you have put it, it has been done in a very effective manner. So I'll take you to the point wherein you spoke that in the last 3 months or 4 months when the COVID hit, you have grown 225%. So tell us more about that, because you were working from from office setup and then suddenly everything closed down and still you managed to create content, or rather start putting up more content, and then you are growing. And the consumption was also significantly going up. So how did you keep pace with that?
So there were no significant changes in our production plan. We just continue to create great content and we'll continue to do so. It was irrespective of whether there was COVID or not, you know. The consumption, though, that you spoke about, it just increased. It just shot up, you know. And we thought of giving something more. So we started a new series on YouTube called 1 Minute Bites, you know, that so that students could learn quickly in a minute. Teachers could learn. They could show interesting facts to students. That was the major change we had on our YouTube channel. Apart from that, I think content-wise, we do have a lot of backlog, which we're going to release slowly and steadily. And we'll grow, right? But consumption-wise, like I said, the viewership just shot up, you know, 225%. So I don't remember the exact numbers we had 4 or 5 months ago. I think I can do the math and tell you later. But as of today, we get close to 250,000 views every day.
Wow.
You know, that's like 1 million views in 4 days, you know. So that is just helping us grow. And that kind of viewership is something that we never really got ever, you know, in the past 4 years of having our YouTube channel. So that's where we stand currently, only on our YouTube channel. The viewership that we're getting is close to like 250,000 views every day. And that is just helping us grow. And now we have realized that YouTube is a main platform for us marketing wise. And like we spoke about PR and stuff. I think YouTube is the place from where people will hear about Don't Memorize. So you ask students who are studying on YouTube, they'll know about Don't Memorize, right? But if you look at these news websites, you may not hear about Don't Memorize at all. So that's how the journey has been. So from where we were to a quarter of a million views every day, that's how we have grown during the pandemic.
Yes. So when I spoke to you, I think some 8 to 9 months back, and that's when you emphasized on the quality of content, and you told me that you keep putting quality content on YouTube, and YouTube will slowly and steadily understand that and start pushing your content to the viewers. I think that is the way in which you believed in that, and that has helped you grow tremendously for the last 3 to 4 years, and definitely in the last 3 to 4 months also. People who have got quality content out there, they will definitely grow, is what you have shown to the world. That PR and marketing, yes, they are required at some point in time, but if you have got quality content, even the big players like YouTube will start pushing your content. That's really nice to know that, about that.
Absolutely. I have no doubt about that at all. So if there are future content creators or future educators who are watching this, the goal is very simple. And I think this, like, everybody knows about this, but people hear about it, but they don't implement it. Like, it's absolutely simple. You create great content, you will win. The only difference is some win sooner, some win at a later time, you know. But the goal is very simple. Just create great content and you will eventually get there.
Great. Tell me about your plans in terms of now. Your dream is to now reach up to 1 billion students or learners out there. So how is your plan for the next, at least for the short-term plan of next 6 months, and long-term for the next 2 to 3 years? What's your plan?
So there are two things we would need. I realized, you know, when I was making notes, two primary things you would need if you really want to educate 1 billion learners. First, you need more content. Right? So there's no question about it, that if you don't have more content, I mean, the lesser content you have, the smaller your audience is. The wider range of content you have, the wider will be the range of audience that you have. So the first thing that we need is more content. And for us to create more content, the team model that I told you about, wherein a lot of external people start working with us, that's a scalable model, right? So in order to create more content, we have to build a scalable model when it comes to creating content. And we've already been doing that. The second, and again, a very important thing is creating content in different languages. So we, again, with help from YouTube and Google, we were able to start our Hindi and Marathi channels. So to give you an idea, having content in Hindi gives you access to 400 million more people who would not have understood your content in English, you know. Wow. So there lies like half your chunk, half of your target base, you know. So we started creating content in Hindi, and I think we'll touch 20,000 subscribers. It's a pretty new channel, and we'll reach 20,000 there, and soon we'll reach 100K and then millions again, you know, through our Hindi content. So we started fixing that as well. We have content in Hindi, we have content in Marathi. We may start having content in other languages as well, you know. So we may start having content in maybe Spanish. You know, Spanish is also a language that is spoken a lot, you know, all across the globe. So we'd probably target Spanish next, and that's the second important thing that we're trying to do, right? Content in different languages. So if we're able to do these two, I think it'll help us reach our goal of, say, educating a billion learners sooner. Apart from that, yes, there are other secondary but important things that we need to work on. We need to work on some tech, you know, for a platform. We need to invest some money in marketing. We need to invest some money probably in sales and stuff. So of course, these other things will help us with outreach, you know, like good tech. There's good tech, there's marketing, there's innovative marketing, growth hacking and stuff that will help you to teach. There are probably a billion learners in the future. But to answer your question, there are two primary things that we have already started working on. That is, create content first and create content in different languages. And the secondary things, we are gradually working on them, like better tech, better sales, better marketing. And that will help us reach, say, teach a billion learners in the coming years.
Great. So for every startup, at the end of the day, money matters. Okay. I know that YouTube has funded you, and there are a couple more other investors on board. Are you looking for new investors to come in, or you are happy with the current set of investors? Definitely you'll be happy. I would say, are you going to stick to those this thing, or you are open to more investors now?
So over the past 6 months, it has been very interesting. A lot of VCs have actually approached us. You know, of course, they're not big VCs, but a lot of VCs have approached us saying, hey, we are looking to fund you. You know, are you interested? And I have said no, right? Because if I want a VC on board, if I want an investor on board, I want the investor to be invested, not just money-wise. So that's a bit tricky, you know, because I would want some kind of strategic alliance to be there in place as well. So to answer your question, if you're looking to raise money, not really. Will we raise money? Probably yes. We are, it's almost done. Like, we're working with this VC called Edupreneur Village, and they are looking to fund us, but there is a significant chance of having strategic alliances there, you know, because they have a lot of connect with schools and a lot of connect with teachers, you know. So we would like to utilize that platform that they have to grow, you know, our user base. So we'll be raising some money from them, and they'll probably be our third investors, or fourth, if I assume, say, YouTube to be one of the investors. So are we actively looking for a lot of money, to raise a lot of money? No, because I think we are a company that is doing well, that is generating profits. So we are not really in need of money at the moment. But we will be raising money through Edupreneur Village, like I told you.
Amazing, Ganesh. When startups are going out and spending a lot of money in marketing and struggling to break even, now here is a startup from a semi metro city of Thane, who are saying that, hey, we are not looking for VCs or investors. We have already into profits, and we will decide who comes on board and who will help us be a strategic partner. That's amazing to listen to a startup saying that.
Yeah, it's not a very cool model to have, though. Again, it doesn't sound cool at all, you know, that you're growing slowly, steadily, and running a profitable company. What is cool is burning a lot of money currently. So everybody who raises money starts burning like lots of it just for growth and not being profitable. It's a model that probably VCs like, because it's fast growth. We will not be comfortable with that model. I am pretty sure about that. We'll not be good at it because it's not in our DNA. You know, so we want to grow slowly, steadily, add a lot of value for our students. And that's how that's how we would like to grow in the coming years.
Great. So I will wind up this session in the, say, next 4 to 5 minutes. So I would say that there are in, talking specific to YouTube, because your lot of content is on YouTube, and definitely your website is the New Look website is looking really good. So, but in specific to YouTube, we have got gamers coming into YouTube. We have got different professionals, or I would say freelancers, coming into YouTube and doing a lot of stuff. I think you would fit into a section of YouTubers which who I think going forward would be called as edutubers or something like that, who come and talk about education and knowledge and things like that. And I think it's high time people realize that edutubers can actually do a lot of things and help to get a better generation coming up. And because at the end of the day, knowledge and education is required for kids to understand where they want to go. Learn definitely, but at the end of the day, if they are not able to explore different areas, then I would not say that everyone will become a doctor or engineer, things like that. But at least the basics have to be clear. And I think edutubers would be doing a wonderful job in helping people reach out to that. So that is one. But before I conclude the session, I just want to understand, because still in India, there are a lot of people who are not able to access to internet, and there is a lot of issues in terms of the internet connectivity and things like that. So is there something that you have in mind to help out that sector of students or learners?
So yeah, I'll talk about both the points. First is your point of being an edutuber on YouTube. YouTube is going to focus significantly on the education sector in the coming 5 to 10 years. Significantly, and they're working with a lot of edutubers. They're assisting them, they're helping them grow, giving them tools that they need, you know, that will help them grow on YouTube. And the difference, of course, is like with education, like people don't really have an intrinsic motivation to get onto YouTube and say, okay, I'll learn. It's something that you have to do, right? Like for most people, unless you're a geek, right? So which is why the growth is not as fast. Like you will see a few gaming channels, like I know a few gaming channels who have crossed, say, 2 million subscribers in 2 years. You know, that's crazy, crazy growth, right? That's not going to happen with education. If you start an education channel, you will not get 2 million subscribers in 2 years. Again, there could be exceptions, but that doesn't happen, right? It doesn't happen at all. So the growth is slow, but the future is bright, is how I would put it. Your second, sorry, could you just repeat your second question, Vijay? I just
so I was talking about the accessibility issues across
accessibility.
The, yes.
Sorry, yeah, it just stuck me. Here's what I think. I think lack of accessibility to the internet is a pretty big issue at the moment. But I don't think it will be an issue in the coming 2 to 3 years, right? So in the next, say probably 3 to 5 years, we may not be talking about this issue, right? And for that, of course, we trust Jio, we trust the big industrialists, you know, who are going to help us with the job of giving access to internet to all people in the society, you know, all whether they are underprivileged or not, you know. So my view is that in the next 3 to 5 years, this is not going to be an issue. It's an issue if you want to solve something that, if you want to solve a problem which is going to last over the next 3 to 5 years, yes, you should work towards it. But I don't see this as an issue, because we are looking at the future, right? So if we start building something for offline, it would be a temporary issue that we are solving. But we would want to give access offline to our users through the app where they could download it, because of different, like, other issues other than lack of internet. So some people like to watch content offline. It's like they download 10 videos onto their app and just watch it without access to internet, you know, so that if the internet is slow. So of course we'll give that feature, but we're not going to build anything special because there is lack of access to the internet. That is, I feel is a very temporary issue, and it'll get sorted soon.
Great. And I think, as you said, that the geos and the big industrialists will definitely tap into that and plug the hole, is what I will also assume in the next 2 to 3 years. I would not say even 3 to 4 years. I think that the market is wide open for them. So maybe in the next 2 to 3 years, I think with the optical fibers and things going across the rural areas, I think things should be sorted out. Great. Yes. So I'll wind up the session. It was great talking to you, Ganesh. And I would conclude with your own words that the growth is slow, but the future is bright. Definitely don't memorize. The growth has been slow but significant in the last 6 years. And I think it's the right time for to see you tremendously growing from here on and reach that billion mark way before you are expecting for another 4 to 5 years, but I think that you should be doing that another 2 years time. So all the best to that journey.
Thanks, yeah, Vijay. I should definitely thank you because I think you are interviewing and talking to a lot of people who are doing great things in the society, you know, and I've seen the list of people you have covered, and I think most of them are not spending on PR. Right. So any kind of visibility that we get in this way, it really helps us. It helps us grow, you know, and it kind of helps us believe that there are people who are willing to listen to our stories as well. And I should thank you for the opportunity, you know, because you've helped so many people, like I said, you know, and the list is like, I think never ending, and you're going to continue this, and you've been doing this religiously for a very long time. So good luck to you, and thanks again for the opportunity.
My pleasure, and thank you for the kind words.